Blog Talk Radio.
The following presentation is a production of God Allows U-Turns, There's Life After Drugs, Lagoon, Florida.
There's Life After Drugs. I'm your host of the Eyewitness, Dale Garrett. Now, before I begin our show, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors who make our shows possible each week. The Shores Treatment and Recovery Program is located in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and they treat the clients as a whole person, for they know that the mind, body, and spirit are all delicately intertwined. Now, at the Shores, you're not treated as a billing number or diagnosis, but rather as a whole person whose life has a meaningful story. At the Shores, each client has their own complex and unique needs, so we personalize our treatment programs for the client, for we know that the cookie-cutter approach doesn't offer the best chance of recovery. Relaxation and recreation are the key elements at the Shores, for it's well known that having fun during treatment releases endorphins and aids in relaxation. So here at the Shores, our location near the beach offers the perfect environment for detox and rehab. And having personal service is also a key factor. And we also value modern, clinically advanced treatment. Not only do we keep up on all the new techniques, Our expert staff continues training throughout their time at the Shores to make sure that they're as up-to-date as possible. Treatment options offered at the Shores include medical acupuncture, neurotransmitter therapy, EMDR, 12-step spiritual programs, play therapy, art therapy, music therapy, life skills classes, and more. Now, perhaps the most important part about the Shores Treatment Recovery Program is the community that we have fostered between our staff and our clients. Our team of highly qualified addiction specialists are able to offer personalized treatment by keeping small caseloads, and team members have several areas of technical specialty, and continued training keeps our skills sharp. But, however, without our clients, our community would not be complete. Our clients come from a broad spectrum of backgrounds with diverse life stories. So at the Shores, you can count on finding a welcoming community in which to grow, develop, and get healthy. So for further information, please contact our admissions office at 772-577-0078. So once again, welcome to the Eyewitness, and as I've stated, I'm your host, Dale Garrett. Now, from time to time, I have those who wish to have their story shared in hopes of helping others from making the same mistakes that they have, and to also show that if you truly want it bad enough, that true recovery is possible. So this is why tonight's show is called Confessions of a Meth Cook, The Untold Stories. Now, these aren't being shared to glamorize the drug life, but to show you just how deadly and bad meth addicts and cooks can be, and the actions that can be taken against you for what you're doing. But it will also show you that if you are determined enough to turn your life around from this madness, that there is a far better life out there for you, waiting for you. But it was there before you begin this deadly dance with the devil himself. So with that in mind, tonight we're going to be visiting three different individuals' time during their addictions and what the consequences brought upon them and how they reacted to them. And since these three stories that are being shared tonight are by women, I've asked my co-host, Sarah Beth, to assist me with the show tonight. But before we begin, I would like to ask Sarah to open us up with a word of prayer.
Thank you, Father God. Thank you for this evening. Lord, I just ask tonight that by your divine hand, by your divine intervention, by the power and the anointing of the Holy Spirit, that you reach above, beyond, and below everything Dale and I have planned to do tonight, and that you, Father, shine your light, your glory, your resurrection power to anyone listening. Father, you knitted us in our mother's womb. You have every day of our life recorded in your book. Let us know on this night, Lord, that you have not forgotten, forsaken, or lost any of us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Okay. So now this first story I posted was back in June. Again, this is not to glamorize the use of drugs, but to show the harsh reality of what can happen. Now please take time and look inside yourself and listen to these stories, true stories. And if you're still struggling with drugs yourself, I want you to ask yourself some questions. Is that me? Do I act like that? Do I think like that? Have I done that? Or am I doing that now? And please listen through to the end, because I'm adding it all here so that you can see the progress in these young ladies' lives, and so you can see that if you want something bad enough, there is hope and a way out from crystal meth. By putting your trust in God, all things are possible. Now, the first true story is titled, Wanna See Snowfall in Florida, Confessions of a Meth Cook.
Wanna watch how the snow falls in Florida? I'll never forget those words said to me by my best friend. The first time I had seen any part of meth being made was when the dope was dropping. Watching it was the most beautiful thing I'd seen in a minute. It took my mind off the situation I was in and reminded me of a snow globe. All that dope whirling around that bag. I liked that more than the high. I knew I was in trouble. I tried to stay away when he was making it, but one day he needed help. I didn't know what he was doing, and all of a sudden I couldn't breathe. My nose and my chest were burning, and I was trapped in a windowless bathroom. I was told to get low to the floor because the gas that was suffocating me is lighter than air. That didn't deter me. In fact, that's when my training began. For a couple of weeks, I learned some safety measures that should be taken. And I became not only accustomed to the fumes, but I grew fond of it. Not the smoke, that so gags me. But cooking is an addiction all of its own. I was obsessed with it. I wanted to know everything about it. I watched, asked questions, looked it up online, and helped every time I could. I had seen and heard about the meth lab explosions, but I have no fear of the bottle. Things that happen to get my stress level up now, that's just because I'm on my own, nobody to watch over me, make sure my measurements are right, or take over if it's too much. I've had a year of training, but that's not the norm. I was just lucky. 3 sessions, 3 times to learn how to be a chemist. Day 1, watch. Day 2, help. Day 3, do it. Your teacher will always step in if you're really going to mess yourself up. My second teacher tried to talk me out of it, tried to keep me from seeing it. He told me one day, if you can, get out now. I know it's hard. You've only been doing this a couple months. It doesn't get easier. Look at me, 20 years, lost 3 kids, jobs, money, family, friends. You think I'm proud of this living? This ain't no way to live. It wasn't long after that he heard I was looking to shake it myself. Started letting me do bits once in a while. We had an understanding that when I was itching, he'd let me do it as long as I didn't do it alone, till he said I was ready. My first bottle, all by myself, almost. Had everything right, shaking, 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 nothing. What do you want to do? I was being tested. Of course, I wanted to go. The one thing I was never allowed, the most volatile way to kick it in the ass, is what I wanted to do. Let me put water in it. I know I can handle it. I was so excited he was going to let me. Right when I put the top on, he took my bottle from me and went halfway across the yard. I followed bitching the whole way. A couple minutes later, it calmed down a little. He gave it to me. I was not expecting what I had in my hands. It was hot and hard, and it had to be burped. Even though I was outside, the gas overpowered me. The burn in my lungs, throat, and nose felt like I breathed in needles. Every cut and scratch I had, even the cuticles around my nails burned. That was the last time anyone helped me with my bottle. My father, he came into the house. I was almost a week sober. He told me I was going to cook by myself. No one looking over my shoulder. No one with more experience than me. No one with any experience. I actually didn't want to, but I was told I didn't have a choice. No, he didn't hold a gun to my head, but I'm close with my dad, and y'all know it's hard to tell a parent no. Plus, I'm an addict. I really didn't want to have, he didn't really have to twist my arm that much. We went and got everything. It's not a 30-minute trip to one store. It's a 4-hour adventure to many different stores. Got home, started. It was textbook. Everything from the fuel clarity, how much dope I pulled, hell. I even had someone bitching it was taking too long. That was supposed to be it for me. The agreement was only once. I needed to get my babies back and keep the shit out of my house so it wasn't contaminated. As with all addicts, there's always a reason, always an excuse, and always a way. I turned my father into a bigger junkie than me. It's been 5 months now, and I don't know what to do. Being a cook has its bonuses. You usually have a dope boy or a dope whore or several get supplies in boxes. They're not looked at with respect, and we usually go to any length to get what you need. My father is my dope boy. We live 7 miles from any store, and that has some of anything I need. He'll hitch to get it just so he can get high. I've tried to get him to wait another day because sometimes I don't want to cook. It's stressful. It has a 7-year price tag attached. I hate seeing what I've created. But I have to live with the face that is slowly fading away. I see it every day. I know how it feels to go without. I have to watch someone I love going through it, knowing I caused it and I can't stop it. Hurts. I'm in a position of God. I can make one hurt. I can make one wait. I can make one well. It's a power that not many people feel and most cooks know. I know. It gets to their head. I have to live with the nasty attitude he has when he can't get no dope. I've never seen my father get like this, even when his crack and coke addiction was at his peak. He stopped using all the other drugs because he's consumed with meth now. I'd rather him be on anything else, everything else, after seeing what this does and what goes on in it. Just as he is hooked on meth, I am hooked on cooking meth. Wait, I can make one well. It has the power that not many people feel and most cooks know. I know it does get to their head. I told you, he stopped using everything else but this meth. And now I'm hooked on meth. I never understood why one simply couldn't stop doing something they didn't want to do. I never felt so weak that one word would start my head racing and my mouth watering. I never knew that the inner battle that goes on inside one's head of what they want to do and what ends up happening till now. I can't understand it, but I have to live with it. I have to accept that I will always want to do something that I don't want to do. I have to accept that I will be sick to my stomach, craving something that will kill me, yet I'm not suicidal. I have to realize that my life will never be what it once was. I will always have to be on guard, always fighting a battle. Not against an army, a rogue elephant, or a lethal virus. No, I'd be so lucky. I have to be on guard against myself. First Cook told me, there's not much to worry about. The crap on the news is from propane. I was ignorant to anything and anything having to do with meth. Told me it was safer to shake and bake. He was my best friend. I had no reason to doubt him. He told me not to breathe in the gas, the lye, and the other ingredients. He burn your skin, and if the ball sparks, shake it out. In a nutshell, that was all. Not a problem. Didn't think much of it. Used small Gatorade bottles. Stayed in my bathroom, away from my kids. We're good. My kids. My babies. I lost them to DCF. I didn't have time to check this new hobby out. I worked full-time, volunteered for various activities my children were in. Recently bought a handyman special, amongst other things going on. Mommy time was down on the list of priorities, and I was just fine with that. Drugs were not a problem until I did meth. Never thought a little bottle could cause so much devastation as I see now. I'm just opening my eyes to the truth. My children were removed. I was lost. I'd never been away from them. My life's worthless without them. I needed to get out of my head, start looking online about meth. I lost my job, and it quickly became more of an obsession. Every waking hour of every day, I was with that dope. I became my best friend's right-hand man. Still thought shake and bake was safe. Learned new recipes, found out what the recycling number on bottles means, studied vein and artery maps, learned how to tell if a house had the copper pipes. I set out to do anything illegal and dangerous. I did not care. Go big or go home. All my sanity was gone. Been using only 2 months, and I was banging out a gram and a half, 2 grams a day. Went to the ER 3 to 4 times in 3 months. I was gone. But that's when I got my book knowledge. My second teacher set out to actually school me. He showed me the scars from a bottle, told me the people he lost to cooking, but none of it mattered. This is where I learned to feel the bottle. You can have the intelligence of a brain surgeon, but if you can't feel the scalpel, you're in trouble. That's when I became fearless of the bottle. That's when I became fearless of death. I came to know my bottle like it's alive, know what mood she's in, know how to manipulate her, know how to get her hot. She became my friend, my lover. Right now, she's my only joy. She's my misery, too. She's that abusive relationship. One time she's ready, willing to give it to you real smooth and easy. Next time she's hot, fired up, ready for war and out to kill. She has stubborn moments when she won't budge, but she will screw with you too. That bottle will suck you in to someone just starting. You think you should do something to fix her. First one to suck in. I was lucky my cook was right there. I was at a loss, thought I forgot something. Put her down to go check. Matter of seconds, my teacher told me she's about to take off. I thought he was nuts. I think I tried to argue, but before I knew it, he was heading for the door, bottle in hand. I knew better than to go out with him. I heard the hissing of the gas being released. It was never ending. He had to keep moving away from where he was so he could breathe. I heard him coughing. That was the only time ever was shake. Took him a while to even talk to me. First, he chewed me for putting her down. But as with any good instructor, he guided me, told me where I went wrong. Now, I had been cooking for a few months. Recently, one sucked in. I know what I did. I know why I did it. What I didn't know was how hard she was going to roll. She sucked in so much, I actually cracked the top to let the air in. I waited, expecting it to go quick like the other one. I began to let my guard down. She went hard, hot, and fast, and I was sitting on the floor inside. I could not get up. I couldn't keep that bottle on top. She would bust. I tried to make sure she didn't boil over, but the top cracked, had to breathe, had to keep both hands on her. My dad was thrilled at first. He'd have dope soon. Then seeing I couldn't breathe, I couldn't speak, I couldn't move, all my oxygen was gone, and she was hissing violently. I thought I was in trouble. I was scared for the first time. I was getting lightheaded. I had no one to help me. She started to slow down enough for me to get up. Dad was standing in the doorway so he could breathe. I almost had to push past him so I could breathe. He was stuck and didn't know what to do. Took a few for her to calm down enough for me to catch my breath. It was hard to breathe still. My lungs burned every time I inhaled. My chest, my throat, nasal passages, my mouth, my lips, it all burned. I rinsed water over and over again, but it still burned. I had burns on my hands and my fingers from the little bits of spray and gas as a continuous release of pressure. I couldn't move my hands, so they were away from the toxic spew. I could not lose control of the bottle. The sores were small, but took a long time to heal. I didn't stop cooking. They were kept open from continued contact with the chemicals. I wanted to stop that day. I was scared. I thought, that's it, no more. Told Dad, no more. Find someone else. Have to. The next day, he told me he couldn't see going to someone else because we wouldn't have enough dope. Now, that was a new turning point for me. He was getting all but one or two small hits from a box. I was happy and high with cooking till I got scared the day before. But we wouldn't have enough dope. Now I make sure I get mine. So my use has gone up, not what it was in the beginning. But I shouldn't be using anything. I need to get my kids back. I see my father in a different way now. Probably the way my mom saw him, but I was blinded to it when I was younger. She got away, pursued her own addictions. As for my dad and I, we are feeding off of each other. I am destroying him. He's destroying me. I let it go. I let my box go. Let my supplies go. I let my money go. Yeah, I'm looking like a chump, like a little bitch, but that's okay. You know why? Because over a few dollars, I almost relapsed. Because waiting for somebody to come up and pick up a box and a half for only $40, yeah, that's cheap as hell. But it was shit-ass pills, hard to break down. No one knows better than anyone that buys them. Because I was getting dope sick and they were working on tweaker time. 45 minutes turned into 8 hours. Because I almost decided to drop the box myself. I let it go. I'm letting it go and I am letting God handle this. I was selling my box because my class called for 2 UAs last week. And now I'm behind on payments again and I haven't been called for work. Last night I was so close to relapse and it wouldn't have mattered if I had made that money, especially if they piss tested me again this week. I have 2 classes left. I go back to court December 9th for my DCF case. And over $20, I almost threw it all away because that's all I got paid. I'm supposed to get the rest, but I'm letting it go. Lesson learned. Last night, my mouth was watering, was churning, nauseous, shaking, sweating. I wanted that needle in my vein. I wanted that to rush to my head so bad, more than anything I wanted in a long time. What got me through? Because I gave up in my head. I gave in. I was determined to get high. I posted on a Facebook page. I'm going to use, have my mind set on it, but I promised someone that I would tell this group first because it's beautiful. New family had talked me down. I thank God for them. I thank God for them because without them, I wouldn't have had the best phone call with my babies in the year and a half I haven't seen them. I was able to tell my daughter, I have only 2 classes left, baby. She was blowing kisses and squeezes to me for the first time in a year. I told my boy that I was keeping in touch with DCF Weekly. He was so proud to hear that from his mama that for the first time since he left, he loved me. They were proud to call me mom again, and both of them, my 13-year-old boy even, blowing kisses and squeezes through the phone. But if I had gone through what I planned, none of that would have happened. I still don't know how I'm going to pay for my last UA class or for my last one, but I just found out from my attorney that I have to pay for both, and the case is closed today. But today I saw that there's a loving God or a higher power, whichever one you are comfortable with. I choose God today, though. But I let go. Today, I didn't relapse. I'm breathing easier. Today.
And now on to our next confession of a former meth cook.
I read your posts and stories every day. My husband and I live through the hell of meth. We started off smoking foils now and then, but the high was so good it went to daily really fast. Then I learned how to make it, and that's really where things went downhill fast. I told myself I would only do it once in a while, but the devil is strong when your soul is weak, and he waits for just the right time to pull you closer. Days after secretly doing my first batch alone, my husband got laid off from work. He came home devastated. I was so proud of my new skills that I said, "Honey, don't worry, I got this." I told him how we could make money and feed our addiction. And by the time I was done talking, we had a master plan. I was going to teach my husband that night. Now, with us partners in crime, we set off to conquer the world and make money doing it. Laugh my ass off. The things that addicts' minds will tell them are ridiculous. We started off shaken every few days, had money. We were staying high. One night, a group of our fellow shakers all sat together. My teacher looked at me and said, "Join the dark side." I knew what he meant. I had never shot meth, but I knew I'd be okay. So I thought. Quickly, us going to work every day went to daily. The fourth gram went to 1 gram shots in the blink of an eye. We had lost control. But what I know now is that we never had control from the start. Days of not sleeping, not eating, began to rip our marriage apart. My loving husband, who was my protector, had turned into this beast of a man that scared me. We fought every day, and there were times I feared for my life. I knew this wasn't my husband anymore, and I also knew this was no longer me. My husband ended up in jail, not over meth, but over some past misdemeanor charge of public intoxication, and I was alone now. But I wasn't alone. It was me and my dope. I loved my dope so much, but I hated it deep in my soul. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror anymore. I heard cop sirens in my head 24/7. I fought the shadow people. They always won. On May 25th, I went to jail after getting my once beautiful four-bedroom house raided. My kids were staying at my mom's because my house was no longer home. I'm very thankful that I did do that, that I got my kids to safety, no matter what my addiction from day one was. When I started, I knew it would get out of control, so I got my kids 2 miles down the road, but they were safe. And after spending 5 days in jail, I got out. Had they come to my house a little bit sooner, I wouldn't have been released from prison until 2035 or something like that. Someone was watching over me. I ended up in the hospital with kidney failure due to the fact that when you become consumed by meth, you no longer eat, you don't drink, you forget to drink. Now, that may sound funny to someone who's never lived through this. How could you forget to drink? But you're no longer in control of yourself. That demon of meth now lives in you. Meth doesn't want you to nurture yourself, to hydrate yourself, not even to love yourself. So the doctors get me all better. And the day I'm released from the hospital, my husband is finally released from jail. Partners in crime back together. Now a normal-minded person would say, "Okay, I know you guys are done." That's the talk of a healthy mind, not our minds. Of course, we were far from done. We begin again, and this time it's much worse. In the end, I overdosed not once, but twice. My last overdose in 2011 is what ended our run with this devil. I sat up in my hospital bed, and I looked at the ceiling, and I began to cry. My husband sat next to me crying, and I said, "God, help us. Something has to change." I said, "God, do something to stop this, please." The next day, we lost our 3 kids, and that's what did it. The only people in the world that meant something to us, gone. But I knew that God did this. And he did this not to hurt us, but to show us that he was listening when I asked him to do something. We have been clean since that day. 3 years clean. On May 25th, 2014, we got our kids back. And it took us 5 long months to do so. First year was rough. I would wake up from nightmares of getting high. I would sit up in my bed crying, waking my husband up and saying, "Did we get high? Did we get high?" And he'd just say, "No, baby. Just a nightmare." The first year, I feel like we still had that love of dope inside. But now, year 3, we have a strong hatred for it. People look down on addicts. They look down on meth addicts and crooks and think that they're beneath them. I've seen people get clean and started looking down on people that are not clean. In my book, that's the people that relapse. You can't ever get too comfortable in your sobriety. You can't let your guard down. Our story is so much more. So many things happen to us during our addiction. The moral to our story is that people can get out. People can break free from the chains of meth, from the pain of addiction. I want to thank you for having your page, for showing others what it's like to be meth addicts and crooks, but most of all, for showing people that they can stop and they can get out of this hell. And I'm very sorry for my long story here, but I wanted to let you know that even though we are 3 years clean, your post gives me strength. Thank you for everything you do for people. Stay strong, live well, keep educating. Lots of love.
Okay. Now you've heard from two of our young ladies' struggles and their victories over this evil drug. We still yet have one more to go. With that being said, allow me to introduce you to the addict.
My name's Christy and I'm an addict. Today I have been clean for 251 days. That's 8 months and 8 days. It took a long time for me to realize this hard truth. I always said, no way, I won't do that. I was always hiding it, hiding from this person or that person. But in actuality, I was just hiding it from myself. Who wants to admit they're an addict? Who wants to admit they're addicted? That's just admitting failure and weakness. I never wanted anyone to know that I was weak. Hell no, that was not me. But it was. In November of 2012, I let meth into my home, only I didn't realize that it was there to stay. Life had finally started to get okay again. I was married, I had two wonderful, beautiful children, and we finally had a place to live. My husband had a job. We were good. Thanksgiving 2012 was awesome. I cooked dinner for my family, and we were all happy. I didn't think things could get any better. Turns out I was right. That would be the last time my family would be proud of me. That same weekend, we had company, and this company brought the devil. I had never done meth before, and I really didn't want to do it. Everyone else was doing it, and my husband told me it'd be okay. Before I did it, I asked him to promise me that this would be the only time. We'd never do it again. He promised. He lied. We stayed up all night doing nothing, really. Felt good, though. I can't really explain it. It was a numb feeling. It was awesome. The next morning, I was ready for bed. This was supposed to be the only time, done and over. I remember sitting in my living room listening to our company and my husband talking about needing to get a box so they could get high. I took my husband to the side and told him that I really didn't want him doing this. I'd seen what our company was going through in their life, and I didn't want us to end up like that. Again, he promised that it would just be for the weekend and that he would stop come Monday morning. Again, he lied. Before I knew it, our company had moved in and we were all doing lines to stay awake. I knew the whole time that this was wrong, but I couldn't stop. Why couldn't I stop? In my house was me, my husband, our two children, another couple, and their child. After a few weeks, things started to get really scary. My husband, he'd stay gone for days at a time, leaving me with no clue to where he was. He had quit his job and was making money in other ways. But his money was always going back into our habit. I was not allowed to work out. I don't even think I left my house for months. At a time, more and more months, I had to stay home, cook, clean, take care of the kids. Now I was raising our company's kids, too. What happened? I remember Christmas Eve came around. We did not have one thing for our children, anything. We had nothing. I've been telling my husband, please, please give me money to get our kids Christmas presents. And he'd always tell me no. Finally, he said we were going shopping for the kids. Yay! I was so filled with joy that my children were going to have something at Christmas after all. My dad and my stepmom came over and watched the kids while we went. But he had lied to me yet again. We weren't going Christmas shopping. I should have known. Our first stop was to his dope man's house. He was there to get his fix before we could go. Finally, we're en route again, not just to Walmart. We had to get boxes. This was our first fight. He told me that we were going to get boxes, and I flipped. Dope makes you feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and this asshole was going to get it, so I thought. I was not going to let him do this to our kids. No way. I started yelling and cussing at him for everything that he wasn't worth. Needless to say, he shut me up. He started hitting me, and he wouldn't stop. He told me that if I went and got the boxes, that he would give me a little bit of money to buy my kids something. So I shut up, and I did what I was told. He eventually gave me $100 in 30 minutes to buy Christmas presents for two kids. As I walked through the Goodwill, I just cried and cried. How could I let this happen? What did I do wrong? What was I going to do to fix this? That night, I sat and cried as I cleaned up the things I had bought the kids, wrapped every present. I found my husband passed out in the closet. I remember hitting my knees and praying to God that he would sleep and wake up a new man. Who was this person? The drug use didn't stop, and the fights got even worse. I was always doing something he didn't approve of and getting punished for it. Why couldn't I just listen? We eventually lost our home and started living from pillar to post. Whatever drugged-out motel we could afford. He would stay gone even longer, leaving me at the motel with the kids and no money to pay for the room, and I would always make a way out. One day, his cousin showed up and offered us a place to stay, but only if we stayed clean. I was so happy. I put the dope down. I was done. He promised me that he would do it, too. The first week, my husband slept the whole time. Things were looking up. After that week, he was back to normal for a hot minute. The second weekend, he asked me to send the kids off for the weekend, so I did. My brother came, picked up the kids. He had other plans. He managed to talk his cousin into cooking dope. I was so disappointed. How could he do this to us, to the kids, to me, his family? His cousin's wife and I spent the night hiding in her bedroom while they did what they wanted to do. Here we go again. This time, I wasn't using, though. The kids came home on Sunday, and he was still getting high. Me and the kids spent our time in the bedroom away from everyone, just locked away. Monday morning, I woke up not feeling too good. I told my husband that I just wanted to spend the day being lazy and doing nothing. At some point, me and the kids fell back asleep, and I woke up to my husband yelling that the cops were there and that they knew his name. They came in and searched the house and found all the things that he had used to make the dope with, which I thought he had gotten rid of. Our kids were taken away, and we were arrested and charged with unlawful conduct towards a child. I'll continue this story tomorrow. That's enough memories for one day. August 22nd, we spent the next 9 days in jail. The whole time that I was there, all I could think about was how to fix everything. How was I going to get my kids back? Will my family ever forgive me? Could my marriage be saved? Where was I going to live? So much went through my head at that time. Finally, on the ninth day, we were bonded out of jail. My dad had arranged for us to stay with his cousin. She gave us a place to stay, food to eat, a job, anything we needed. That lasted for about a month or two. But the whole time, while I was doing whatever I could to figure out how to get our kids back, my husband was hell-bent on getting high again. He would pick fights with me for no reason. I think he was just trying to figure out how he could get away from me so that he could go and get high. I guess that the stigma about us and drugs got the best of my family member, and they thought we were using again, which we weren't, or at least I know I wasn't. Because after an argument, we were left being told that we had no place to stay. Over the next few months, we started living in and out of motels yet again, and it didn't take long for the devil to start calling my name. My husband had started using again, and it was available to me. I gave in. I was in so much pain in life, and I knew that I could make it all numb again. So I did. We began working for a motel and using to have a place to stay. Things weren't getting any better, and I could see that they weren't going to get no better, no matter how hard I tried. I wasn't even using a lot, but I was still using. My husband was back to his old ways, staying up for weeks at a time. The fighting had started again. I knew that I was done with my marriage, but I didn't know how to get out, so I changed. I was no longer at his beck and call. I wasn't a nice doormat. I was fighting back. I remember one night, after he'd been up for weeks, he'd been mad at me all day for not working, and I wasn't feeling well, so I didn't go in. He came in that evening, locked the door. He swore that I had been in there having sex with another man, and I really hadn't. I begged him to just take a shower, eat, and get some sleep. I really didn't feel like fighting, and he wasn't having it. He started hitting me, and he just wouldn't stop. I tried to leave, and he stood in front of the door and told me that I wouldn't leave there alive. I ran for the phone, and he pulled it out of the wall. He just kept hitting me and hitting me. I knew that where we were staying had a police substation, and that if I just yelled loud enough or managed to get out the door, I could make it stop. So I started screaming and fighting back. Finally, I got him off of me, and I got out the door. I just started running through the parking lot. I seen a cop riding through the parking lot and thought, maybe if I just talk to him, maybe he can make my husband calm down. I turned around and seen my husband cornering towards me. Both our shirts were ripped, and the cop took notice. We were both standing together, and the cop came over and asked if everything was okay. My husband spoke up and said everything was okay. We were just having an argument. I guess I was too scared to say anything different, and the officer drove away. My husband started apologizing, telling me he'd never do it again, it'd never happen again. I didn't really believe him, but I had nowhere else to go. I told him that if he would just sleep, then I would stay and not get the police involved. Big, big mistake. I should have spoke up that night. If I had, things might have been so much different. My advice to any woman out there who is living this way is speak up. It never changes. Do something while you can. After that fight, we lost our jobs and a place to stay, and we moved into yet another motel. He continued to cook dope and stay up, and there was always different methods coming in and out of our room. I was terrified, but I was still using. Why not? I had already lost everything. One night, my husband decided that he was going to cook dope in the motel room we were staying in. Oh, my God, I was so scared. I begged him, don't do it. My opinions didn't matter. He just slapped me and said he was going to do what he wanted to do, and I was going to be a good wife and watch for the cops. Next morning, the front desk came knocking, asking for the room rent, which, of course, we didn't have. I started flipping out. He was not going to do this to me. What have I done? He vowed to take care of me, and this is not what I call being taken care of. I remember grabbing the razor blade off the counter and locking myself in the bathroom. I cut the water onto the tub. I sat down against the door and I cried. I prayed to God that he would let my children know that I loved them and that I did try, but that I knew no other way to end all this. I couldn't take it anymore. And as I started to put the blade to my wrist, someone started kicking at the door and I got pissed. Finally, I was going to be free of all of this and somebody had to foil my plans. I stood up, I opened the door and seen that a few of our friends were in the room. Apparently, they had seen us fighting in the parking lot earlier and had offered my husband work that day so he could make room rent. I just remember being so mad. I wanted to die. It was the only way out of all this hell. He left and went to work, and I broke down. I spent the next 3 days in bed crying and crying, begging God to just end it. I couldn't take it anymore. I did not want to live like that. I didn't have my kids, and that's all that really mattered to me. I didn't need the dope. I didn't need my husband. But I knew I had already burned every bridge with my family. I had nowhere else to go. Please, God, just let me die. Those same friends were renting a trailer. They asked if we wanted to move in and help pay the bills. Oh, my God, yes. Finally, a break. My husband promised again that he wouldn't do the dope anymore. And stupid me, I believed him. For a few weeks it lasted, and then one night things were back to normal. I walked in the house after being gone all day with a friend. Didn't see my husband anywhere. The door to our room was closed, and I knew just what he was up to. I opened the door, and there he was with a few of his friends smoking dope again. I lost it. I walked up and just knocked the total hell out of him. He repaid the favor. We fought and fought, and I took off walking down the road knowing that I had nowhere to go. I got a call saying my husband was in the ER. He had attempted suicide. Should have known he'd do this. He did it every time I left. And as usual, I went back. Why? Why? We did get kicked out of that trailer and decided that we were going to go to the beach with some friends. The next few months were pure hell. He stayed on dope. I did it one last time on his birthday. I felt so bad. I had missed my court date for my kids. And I even missed the court date for my criminal charges. And for what? For a man who just wanted to hit me and keep me high. I had nothing now. We continued to stay homeless, living in tents, sleeping in trucks, taking handouts from anyone who would give them to us. Finally, in February of this year, I had had enough. I called my mom, my brother, and my dad. I told them all we couldn't run anymore, This had to end. I would never get my kids back running from the law. I begged my dad to come and pick us up from North Carolina. We had been all over this country and still hadn't found happiness. I didn't even think that it existed anymore. My dad and his friend drove the 3 hours to pick us up after working all day. The minute I see my dad's friend, I was smitten. I shouldn't be feeling like this. I'm a married woman. While we were on the way back, Dad sat in the back with me and told me how much his friend likes me. I couldn't even believe that a man like that would have eyes for me. He must be crazy. I just pushed my feelings down deep and went on with my life. And over the next couple of weeks, we teetered on whether or not we should turn ourselves in. I was so scared of what was going to happen. I didn't want to go to jail, but I knew it had to be done. Then one night I started drinking, and somehow my husband and I got into yet another argument. A man took me in the bathroom, locked the door, and started yelling at me, telling me that if he couldn't have me, nobody was going to have me. I'm sitting on the floor, and he kicked me in the head, and I started crying. He called the law. He told them that we had warrants for our arrest and that they could trace the phone and find us. They showed up, and we were both arrested. Little did I know that this was the answer to all my prayers. I spent the next 62 days in jail waiting to go to court. During this time, I realized that I had put everyone through so much hell and that it was never worth it. I knew that if I ever wanted a chance at life again, I had to let go of the dope and my husband. In April of this year, my husband was sent to prison, and luckily I was given probation. I have to wait until February of 2015 to file for divorce, which I will be doing. I put myself into an intense drug treatment program, which I will be graduating next week. I have been doing everything I can do to be a better person. I've still not been able to contact my children, but that day is coming. I am clean now, and I'm going to stay that way. I have written this, I guess, to tell the real story to the world, the real one. I heard a man on the news yesterday says that he's never seen anyone come out of a meth addiction. Well, he needs to meet me. Because this chick came out of it and is going to stay out of it. There are more things in life. I am no longer tied down to a man who wants to hurt and belittle me. I'm no longer chained down by the dope. I have started to find happiness in this life. It does exist after all. You just have to let go of the things that are keeping you down. I now love myself and know that no matter what, I'm going to make the best life I can for me and my children. I don't regret the road that I went down. It's merely a lesson learned. I hate that I had to learn it the way that I did. But what doesn't kill you can only make you stronger. And it does. I'm living proof. For the first time in my life, I am proud of me. And other people are as well. If there's anyone out there listening to this that is living that life, please know that there is life after meth. But you have to make the decision to let go. Change your people, your places, and things. August 25th. Finally, the day had come and I was going to court. I had been waiting on this day for months. I was happy and terrified all at the same time. I had to face the judge, the man that was holding my life in his hands. Would he send me to prison? Would I get probation? Would he send me to rehab? I had never been in any real trouble before this, so I had no idea. I had seen people come in and out of jail with charges related to meth. They all got sent to prison. I couldn't go to prison. No way in hell would I survive that. I spent a few days prior praying that God's will would be done in that courtroom, and I was hoping that it wasn't God's will that I go to prison. The night before court, I couldn't sleep. I just lay there praying over and over and over again, thanking God for delivering me from that life. I was not ever going back, and if it weren't for God, I would have never gotten out alive. Here I was, sitting in the courtroom, waiting my turn. I looked around, and I could see that my stepmother, my mother, my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law were all there. Were they there to support me or go against me? I honestly had no idea. I had lost any relationship that I had with my mother when she found out about the dope. She now had custody of my daughter and didn't want her to have anything to do with me. My sister-in-law hadn't really said anything to me since all this started. We had our arguments, but nothing too serious. My stepmother, I knew, was there to support me. We had spoke several times in jail. She told me how proud she was of me and that she knew I was finally on the right track. My husband was also being tried the same day. I hadn't seen him since the night he kicked me in the head and got us sent to jail. All these feelings came rushing through me, and none of them were good. This man had hurt me and had ruined my life. I no longer felt any love for him. After 5 years, there was nothing there but hatred. Finally, our names were called. Here we go. My husband and I were being tried together. Please, God, don't let him mess this up. The judge asked questions about our past and our drug use. My husband had a lengthy rap sheet and lots of tries in rehab. I could see this was not looking good on me. He was sentenced first, and they sentenced him to 10 years, 8 years in DOC, and 2 years of inpatient rehab when he is released. Also 5 years probation. My heart fell to the floor. If they were doing that to him, I was going to prison for sure. My husband was taken out of the courtroom before I was sentenced. As he was walking past me out the door, he bumped into me hard and said, "Don't forget to wait for me." Are you kidding me? I don't think so. I know that you're supposed to stay married until death do you part, but as far as I'm concerned, he had already killed me. This is the end for sure. Now it's my turn for sentencing. I was shaking. I felt like I was going to faint. I kept repeating the Lord's Prayer over and over and over in my head, not really hearing what the judge was saying. Finally, he looked at me and said, "I sentence you to 10 years in the Department of Corrections." Then he stopped, and my heart again went to the floor. I was going to vomit. Then I heard it. Suspended to 5 years of probation and 68 days time served. Yes! Thank you, God. I got my second chance. I was going home. That happiness only lasted a second because I realized that I had no home to go to. I had lost everything and everybody during this process. What was I going to do now? One thing I knew for certain was that there was no way I was ever going back to dope. Never. When I finally got to walk out of those jail doors, I had a weird feeling. I was there all alone. For the past 5.5 years, I was never alone. I always had someone telling me where to go, what to do, who to talk to. This was all very new. I found a phone, and I called my dad. He arranged for a place for me to stay. Thank God I wasn't going to be sleeping on the streets. I was going to be around people that cared about me, wanted to see me do good. That was a change. That was almost 5 months ago. I had been working very hard, turning my life around for the better. Like I said, I put myself in an outpatient treatment program, and I will be graduating from that in 2 days. I have stayed clean from all the drugs. I have been living in the same place, and it is not a drugged-out motel. I'm still finding it hard to find work. I've had several interviews. Once they find out about my felony, they say they can't hire me. That has to be one of the most difficult parts of this process, not being able to provide for myself. Hasn't stopped me from trying. I'm currently trying to regain custody of my 3 kids, or at least get the no-contact order dropped, so that I can at least talk to them and let them know that Mommy didn't ever forget about them. They are my drive, the reason I got clean, and the reason that I stay clean. And I'll get them back in due time. But God, I hate due time. I'm still going strong on my recovery. I've had a lot of people stand by me since leaving the dope behind. Without those people in my life, I don't think I would be here today. I may have already given up by now. And I found the love of my life and my family that I thought I lost. I wouldn't change a thing that has happened to me. I am who I am today because of all the decisions I made. Granted, some of them are not the smartest decisions, but they're definitely not regrets. They're merely just lessons learned.
So, crystal death. It sounds pretty scary, huh? Well, let's look at some facts here about crystal meth, and I'll let you decide whether this is scary enough for you, okay? So let's begin. Meth, crystal, ice, glass, chalk, crank, speed, go fast. Methamphetamine is an extremely addictive drug that causes significant brain damage. It's related to cocaine, but it's much more toxic to brain cells than cocaine. The high it produces is the result of a surge of chemical called dopamine in the brain. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter, the chemical that communicates a message from one brain cell to another. Cocaine and methamphetamine create a huge surge in dopamine and an intense, long-lasting high.
The high is a feeling of confidence, power, intelligence, and control. There is an increased alertness and endurance. You feel invincible. You can party all night on methamphetamine. When dopamine is depleted, you go into the crash. At first, the crash is just a mind depression lasting for just a day or two. But after you've been using for a while, the crash gets worse. It's like the worst flu you have ever had. Achy, depressed, tired, grouchy, and an intense anxiety. The crawling out of your skin feeling. And it will last for 7 to 14 days. The only thing that relieves the anguish of the crash is another high. So how does methamphetamine work? The connection between the two nerve cells is called a synapse. Cell A is the sending cell, and cell B is the receiving cell. Now, cell A releases a chemical called a neurotransmitter into the gap between the cells, and cell B sends back a message that says the message has been received. Cell A then reabsorbs its neurotransmitter, and the signal ends. The signal is very fast, like a click. Cell A and cell B have been talking like this for years and years, using dopamine as a neurotransmitter. Then one day methamphetamine comes along and disables cell A so that dopamine is flooded into the synapse at 1,000 times the concentration these cells have ever seen before. Instead of the click, 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 cell B is now used to, it now hears a siren in its ear. Cell B sends a signal back to cell A saying, enough already, I've heard you. But it's not cell A that's doing the screaming. It's crystal meth doing the screaming. And crystal meth won't shut up. Cell B might put up with this abuse once or twice, but if it happens too many times, you will eventually not get high anymore. You're shooting up every 2 hours just to stay out of the crash. You now have a $200 a day habit just to feed and to feel normal. So what happens when the connection is broken? You no longer have control over your temper or motivation levels. You have twitches and tremors and muscle spasms, and you can't eat or sleep. You're depressed, and you have panic attacks that go on for days. These connections eventually are restored after you've been off meth for about 12 to 18 months. That's how long it takes for cell A to repair its vocal cords and for cell B to grow new receptors. But then there's the battery acid effect. You don't have enzymes to metabolize methamphetamine. It's made out of battery acid, antifreeze, and red devil eye. Your body turns it back into caustic chemicals, hydroxyl-free radicals, and they eat holes in your brain. This brain tissue doesn't grow back. You learn to work around the hole, compensate by using other parts of your brain, but you don't replace the dead tissue. The areas that process moods and emotion are damaged, and the result is paranoia, which is uncontrolled fear, rage, uncontrolled anger, panics, uncontrolled anxiety, delusions and hallucinations, uncontrolled perception. The areas that control coordination are damaged, and the result is involuntary movements like uncontrolled twitches of the fingers and facial twitches. Now, once I met a man in jail who had a constant chatter in his teeth. It never stopped. Even when he tried to sleep, it continuously chattered. Early signs of damage include severe depression, insomnia, moodiness, and irritability, violent and aggressive behavior, inability to concentrate, memory loss, and anorexia. Once you're addicted, you lose control over every part of your life. You can't keep a job, and you end up living in your car. Now, new connections are formed as they are reformed in the first year of abstinence. You see significant improvement. The panic attacks get less frequent and severe. The paranoia and delusions improve. You start thinking clearer, and you can control your temper better. You start eating better and sleeping more. The tremors and muscle spasms get a little better each day. But any residual damage after 1 year is likely to be permanent. The new connections formed have an unfortunate feature. Severe craving is wired into the brain so that anything that reminds you of your drug will set you off the pathway that causes drug cravings. The sight of the house that you used to party at will set you off. The smell of marijuana, the sound of party music, aluminum foil, a spoon. Anything you associate with the drug experience can be a trigger to cause an unbearable craving for more meth. I met a man in prison once who got out of jail, and on the way home, he treated himself to a beer and a joint. He never made it home. He ended up back in jail that very same night because he didn't know about triggers. He thought it was over. Now, he had been clean for a whole year. He didn't think he'd have to ever worry about ice again, but he was wrong. Methamphetamine makes you feel powerful and confident, energetic and intelligent. You can dance all night and be cool with your friends. Got some bad news for you, folks. The high is a lie. Methamphetamine is a lie. Meth gave you a feeling of power and control, but you have no power and you have no control. Meth promises you pleasures and endless energy, but only delivers depression and insanity. It gave you an illusion of confidence and independence. You're now chained to a chemical, and by the time you realize it, it's too late. You can't just walk away from it. You have to stand up to the dealers and to the party people offering you this stuff. You have to tell them to get lost. Even if your best buddy is trying to get you to try it, you have to tell him, sorry, not interested. Now, if your buddy is really your friend, you will get him to quit now while he still can. When you stand up for what you believe, you can be sure that some people are not going to like it. They're going to mock you and insult you. They're going to be suspicious of you, and they might even get violent with you. The dealers, they're going to hate you and call you a narc. No matter what you do, somebody is always going to hate you. Look around. See who hates you. Make sure it's the right people. God created us to be fully integrated persons in a relationship with Him. We were made to love Him and be loved by Him. Our brain chemistry was carefully engineered by our Creator with systems for balance and control that are delicate and precise. When we use drugs, we deliberately choose to suppress our higher brain functions and reduce ourselves to something less than human. Methamphetamine reduces us to not much more than an animal, and Satan wants to reduce us to the level of an animal and destroy our capacity to relate to God. It takes incredible courage and strength to quit a drug habit and stay clean. No one has the kind of strength in themselves. Recovery from addiction requires discipline, courage, honesty, humility, and strength of character. You build these personality characteristics by building a relationship with God. You learn discipline from Him. He's a master at making us face the consequences for our bad decisions. You learn honesty from Him, and you can't play games with God. He's not stupid. We build a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. He suffered and died to put you in a right relationship with God. He took upon Himself the punishment for our rebellion so we could come to God as our Father and be accepted as His child. Invite Him into your life with just a simple prayer. Just say this simple prayer. Lord Jesus, I believe You died for me, and I believe You live again. I believe You have forgiven me, and I believe You can help me defeat my addiction. Come into my life and fill me with Your Spirit. Help me to organize my life around You. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. There. Now, isn't that simple? Now, if you just said that and meant it in your heart, you have now been forgiven for all your past sins, no matter what they are. Now, isn't that awesome? The more you hang around Jesus, the more you will act like Him, and the more you will become like Him. He gives you courage, strength of character and integrity, and your personality is strengthened. Now, for those of you who may have decided to accept God's love and forgiveness here tonight, both myself and my co-host, Sarah Beth, have been led by God to make sure that we get a Bible into your hands. So if you will, you can either contact us through our email at theresLifeAfterDrugs@gmail.com, or you can simply leave a comment on any of the group pages where we post our shows, and so that we can make sure we get a Bible into your hands. Now, drug addiction is not a hopeless condition. It takes a lot of courage to quit a drug habit, and I have tremendous respect for anyone who can do it. Facing yourself, changing the way you live, takes courage. No one has more courage than the man that carried the cross at Calvary, and he is willing to share it with anyone who asks. Father, I come before You tonight thanking You for delivering me out of the bondage that this deadly drug, crystal meth, held over me for so many years. Yes, while it's true, I had to end up getting blown up and set completely on fire from the meth lab I was operating before my eyes were opened to the harsh realities of this evil drug. But we each have our bottom, and I pray, Father, that no one will ever have to experience the bottom I had to experience. Now, this time, Father, to bring close to You anyone out there who is searching for that door that will allow them to escape from this horrible addiction. and bring them into contact with someone who can guide them into your loving arms. I thank you for allowing me to be used as your empty broken vessel, Father, and give all the praise, glory, and honor to you. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Well, that wraps up our show for tonight. I hope that it's helped someone out there, for this is what I feel led God has called me to do.
I also want to let you know that the stories that you've heard tonight are all true stories that are done on a page that I have. It's called Meth Lab Busters on Facebook. So now, when I first started Meth Lab Busters, it was just strictly for meth, but it's grown into where now we allow any and all addictions to be on it. And it's a good page for support and for your failures, so you can get support and to share your successes and everything. So if anyone ever decides they would like to share their story or testimony, you can private message me there on the page, and we'll talk, and I'll be more than happy to get with you and see about having your testimony shared here on the show with us here. I do thank you for your time tonight. Y'all have a good evening. God bless, and enjoy the music.
It's gonna rock you till you're out of a job. Thank you. Thank you.